CliffCentral.com. Welcome back. Our leader interview. We just had our master lesson with Brett Tromp, the CFO of Discovery Health, almost said CEO. And he's been talking to us about authentic leadership, a wonderful podcast. Do download that, listen to it if you didn't listen to it live. Now it's our leader interview. Brett, I did see something about explain to me CFO Discovery Health, and then I saw something about CEO Discovery Healthcare Services. What is the difference there?
So I've been the CFO of Discovery Health, I think, for the last 10 years. And in the last 2 years, I've been fortunate to be given some operational and management responsibilities. And what that entails is a bunch of some were existing business. One was an existing business, but two of them were new businesses. So what falls in there, which we call Discovery Healthcare Services, where we actually start moving into the provision a bit of healthcare services, not just the administration of services, which we've traditionally done. And what that entails is a corporate wellness business. So we do wellness screenings at clients. We do about 200,000 of those a year. And then we do, we've got a home care business, which started about a year and a half ago, where we're starting to treat people at home, which is growing with huge success. So that's a big trend in Europe, in the US. We're getting some good traction there. And, about 2 years ago, we started an online, courier pharmacy called Southern RX. And very shortly, we'll have a wholesaler. We'll be able to procure our own drugs. And so that will be a division where all our services that we provide to members outside of administration services will start to take shape in.
Wow.
So it's quite exciting.
So that's all part of your portfolio at the moment?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Together with the small little job of being the CFO of Discovery Health.
No, I've got such strong people around, such strong team. I don't do much. I get leave tomorrow.
Well, that's a good sign. Now, before we go to the Brett today, yeah. I'm interested in the Brett as a teenager. So yeah. If we had to rewind the clock, yeah. And I could now watch from the sky Brett the teenager, what were you like as a teenager? What would the guys who went to school with you say about Brett?
Sure.
Were you early a bloomer or late bloomer? Just a little bit more about you.
Yeah, I was very fortunate. I had amazing parents. Middle-class family, went to the old Model C schools. Probably so I was more of a late bloomer academically. I've played quite a lot of provincial sport, in various sports. So I was big at sport. And in fact, most of my close friends now are still my school friends. So it's quite unique. I met my wife at school as a teenager. So I was very much social. I was never a naughty kid, but I was just social.
Busy,
schoolwork came last to me. I got through, but I realized I really started working in varsity more than at school.
Well, what took you to studying CA? Usually the fairly good students, I guess, decide to go doctor or engineering or CA. You're saying schoolwork came last. I guess you didn't do badly, but it wasn't your priority. When did you decide, I'm going to become a chartered accountant?
Yeah. I mean, I went through, I can't remember. I did some work in a business where I got exposed a bit to some of the financial work, which I really started to enjoy when I was at school. And I also did some work in an optometry practice and actually was thinking about becoming an optometrist. But when I went to varsity, I thought, well, let me just start with a BCom degree. I wasn't 100% certain I was going to be a CA. That just led to the love of it. And fortunately, KPMG gave me a bursary, which helped with the studies, and really from there I just grew to love it. I didn't enjoy auditing, so I wanted to leave auditing as soon as possible, but I realized that CA was a profession that opened many doors, but I didn't want to be the traditional CA. I wanted to it would open the doors and get you somewhere, but I wanted to be different. I wanted to make it a brand or a profession that wasn't traditionally how it was seen in the past. So
dry CA, sort of whatever,
Yeah, exactly.
Sounds like you're well on your way to doing that, if you haven't already arrived. But a quick overview of your career after you became CA?
So I went to KPMG. So I got a bursary from them. So when I finished my studies, I did my articles there. At the end of my third year, my wife and I had got married a year before. She was also a chartered accountant. And we went over to work in the US on one of those secondments for 6 months. And so that was nice. But when I came back, I realized that, you know, auditing wasn't for me. And I started looking around. I did a lot of little jobs, and I worked for my father-in-law. And I went to accountants on call, and I said, look, I'm just looking for some temporary work. I was, you know, seeing my wife was still at KPMG, and they found a temporary job here. And fortunately, after 6 weeks, I was working in the group finance department and reconciling creditors, recons, and payroll, which somehow I managed to do. They offered me a full-time job, and I've just loved the culture, and I've basically, I mean, I've basically been on a one-horse race my whole career. So,
yeah, but being on a so-called one-horse race in Discovery is very different, isn't it?
Yeah.
There are companies, and there are companies.
Yeah.
And this has still got the First Rand Group culture.
Yeah.
Of creating new businesses within the business.
Yeah.
So it tends to keep dynamic leaders because they have opportunities to grow and develop and be stretched.
That's exactly it.
All right, so I'm interested in where this deep sense of ownership comes from.
Yeah.
Is that the way you grew up? You really believe it's your company, even though it's technically not. But you seem to have a strong sense of ownership.
Yeah.
Is that just... You did seem to indicate in the master lesson we had now that... You consciously try to also adopt an attitude of this is my business, but I'm willing to bet that doesn't come easy anyway for someone who wasn't taught it early on. Where does it come from with you? Can you pinpoint or not?
You know, I think I was always brought up to appreciate things and respect what I had. So for me, you know, from the start was I always. I learned to respect from my parents. I learned that, you know, a lot of your foundation happens at home. So I guess it was always just in me. And I've also found, you know, having a very supportive wife and children where I can really sow into has been very unique. Children have taught me, I think, more than anything. So that ownership of, you know, look, I've been given a responsibility to mentor them, grow them, and hopefully turn them into people that will be successful in society one day. That is a deep sense of responsibility and ownership for me. And so, and the other thing that I think really drives it for me is I have a deep sense of loyalty. So I'm very loyal, probably to my detriment at times. So often you get probably hurt or disappointed in people more than you should. But on the positive side, it makes you very loyal to a business, which brings that ownership into account. And just, you know, I did have to, you know, you do have that brought up. But like I said, I did have to train my mind a bit. But, you know, it was through seeing that, through being a parent, that actually made me realize a lot of it as well.
Yeah, that sense of ownership. I think most CEOs, entrepreneurs, business leaders would want that from their people. Just own it. You know, just treat it like it's yours.
Yes.
Like the problem is yours, like the benefits are yours, like the business, the assets are yours.
Yes.
But it's not, I don't know if it, do you think it's something that's regressing in our society, the sense of ownership, or do you think also with the younger generation coming through, is it there?
Yeah.
Do we see less of it? Maybe you're not the right person to ask in some ways because Discovery attracts a lot of quality people. But your overall sense on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good question. I think it's difficult because we see this millennial generation of people that want many jobs and are in it for what's in it for me more than the other way around. So there is this generation that's coming through, which they call the me generation. Is that it's me. And, you know, how are you serving me and what are you doing for me? And I'm not saying that's wrong, but it talks your point around how difficult it is to take ownership. But, you know, for me, I think, you know, the ownership, as much as we can look at it as purely an ownership thing, it's a mindset change because if you think like you're an owner, you perform better. That's the concept that I'm trying to entrench in everybody that I work for. Is that you might not agree with me around ownership, but all I'm saying is that if you think like an owner, which you have to train your mind to do, you'll perform better. You'll be happier. You'll want to come to work. You don't see a business owner that's doing well that wakes up and goes, I don't want to come to work. They love coming to work.
You say it to the person A, and something clicks, and they try to work at that principle. Then you say it to person B, and it's just a water off a duck's back, yeah. You know. So I guess our upbringing plays a big role, Louis.
The beauty about ownership is what it does to you. It's not just about the business around you. There's a deep-rooted change in your own setup. So if you want to use the word selfish, then if you want to be really selfish, then learn to care and take ownership in that sense. Of course, that's not really selfish, but it's the best for you and therefore the best for your family and people around you.
Yeah.
Where does your energy come from? What really drives Brett? Maybe, I don't know how much association you've had with Adrian Gore over the years, but yeah. Of course he's Mr. Sleep Little, Mr. Infant, Mr. Energy, Mr. I don't know, you know, I've met him a few times. And maybe some of that rubbed off on you, the culture also.
Yeah.
But that is what I've heard about you. You've got a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Is it, what drives you?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, getting back to, you know, my personal beliefs from my Christian beliefs, I believe you're on this earth for a short time. And I believe each and every one of us are here to make a difference. So I believe time matters. Really, it does matter. Like every minute, every second. I'm not negative. I try and look at things in a positive way. Doesn't mean I'm always positive. But, you know, I come to work and I honestly believe when I wake up, I'm going to make a difference today. And that might be as simple as acknowledging someone who's had a haircut and say, you look nice. Or you've changed your glasses. And that just, the penny drops and something makes someone feel good. So I just love it. And you just feed off that energy. I enjoy my running and I enjoy time with my kids. I try and see life as a privilege rather than a burden. And success to me, it's not measured on money and things. It's measured on impact. What are you doing? What is your life counting for something? All of us have that. And, I wrote another article. I think it's going to be published in Accountancy SA soon. But it was based on a biblical principle of the three talents. And it was like everybody's been given three talents. So this, to put it very quickly, is that this business owner went away and he gave one person 5 million rand, he gave his other employee 3 million, he gave the other one. And he came back after a year and the one who had five said, I doubled it. So he said, great, you're doing well, I'm going to give you more. The one who had three said, I made 2 million, he said, you've done well, I'll give you more. The one was, I put it in a safe, I was scared I'd lose it. He said, look, you didn't even put it in a bank and earn some interest. You didn't change from a year ago. Take it away and give it to the one that has five and you disappear, you're lazy. And that's how I see people, that we've each been given something, and even if we just stick it in a bank and we make some interest, we've improved some way, we've done well. And then that's the energy that makes me do, because it's like a business. If you don't improve and you don't do your role, be given to someone else.
Energy feeds off energy. So once you're in that cycle where you're energized by changing someone's life by smiling or by changing the world through your products, or it just feeds off each other. Any comments there, Louis? And then I want to know from you these two guiding principles, character and integrity. Why that plays such a big role, and maybe it's the same as some of your other comments.
It's great speaking to Brett Arden, because we've had contact with Discovery quite a few times. I must admit, even coming here, there's a friendliness, and they seem to maintain that, even the reception as well. So there's a pretty good culture, Brett, and you reflect that culture, I think.
Thank you.
Character and integrity, two guiding principles in your life.
Yeah.
Tell me more about that.
Yeah.
Because I'm also interested in how do you develop it in people, but we can talk about that in a moment. Why is it so important to you?
Yeah. So integrity for me underpins everything. I think you get one chance at your integrity in life. And you can sort of build it back, but once your integrity is gone, people just don't trust you anymore. So every decision I make has to have a foundation of integrity on. And I've never compromised that. I teach my kids that to the nth degree. If you get 5 cents back in change more than you should, you go and take it back. It's all those things where people aren't watching. Integrity counts, and it always comes through. So for me, you know, when I look for people, the first part of the interviews is all around integrity. You try and ask a question that you would try and gauge where people's integrity is. Just amazing. You can trust them. And so for me, it's always been around that. Character is interesting because that takes time to develop, and people have different levels of character. But, you know, it links back to integrity. So I'm always looking for that integrity, and it just underpins everything for me. Yeah, it's hard to say in character. A lot of character's personality. But
the big challenge is, how do you, if that's important to you, and we do a lot of leadership development in the world, and you know, it's a big industry, how do you develop character? How do you develop integrity? Or does it simply come from your upbringing and your value system already? I can't develop that inside you to some degree. Any comments, Louis? I'm not sure that you can necessarily instill it in someone. I guess someone can go wrong from an integrity point of view, come down hard, and learn the lesson the hard way that it actually matters. And it's going to take me 10 years to sort out my reputation. And that'll change them. But that's a dramatic, horrible experience that they've had. Proactively, building character and integrity.
I think, Arden, what makes a big difference, fits in with Brett, what he was saying. Remember Tuli Madamsela, in our sessions with her, was saying how she believes that people all try the best, a genuine belief in other people. Mm. I believe if you believe in yourself with your deep-rooted quality, where you come from, divine heritage, etc., then you can transfer that to other people. So believing other people's goodness has a tremendous impact on them. It doesn't change everybody, but it does change. If you don't believe in the goodness in people, I'm afraid you're going to draw the negative part of them. It's like this when you always discuss negative things, and obviously it becomes acceptable to you. So I think your belief in other people is important. Brett, I'm sure you try hard to find that quality in people. And people tend to respond, not always, but they tend to respond to that.
Mm-hmm. Look, I think building character, you put people through the fires of life and give them a difficult project. So there are ways to carve at their character, you know, integrity. Maybe a different one. I don't know if you have any comments on that.
I mean, you're right. So, I mean, like Louis said, from my point of view, I always start off with the point of reference that people are inherently good. So I start with that and inherently say, trust people. I think integrity is significantly shaped by your upbringing. So whether you've brought up in a family, I mean, let's say, for example, a broken home, so you might have a different view of integrity in marriage if you're from a family that's not from a broken home, or you've brought up in a very poor family or an alcoholic family. So there's definitely upbringing. But, you know, I still believe inherently people want to do the right thing. I don't think they are made to want to come and do things and break the law and steal and that. So I always try and pull that out, but I agree with you. I think it's not. I think characters, you're right. I think that's shaped by but a lot of your character you force and shape yourself. You can make decisions. You can do more than others. You can actually try and make yourself a better character than you can. But integrity, I don't know. It's a tricky one. I think it's inherently probably a lot about how you brought up, to be honest.
It's amazing. I also think you can have a level of integrity at a certain stage of your life. We've got good examples. Hansi Kroonier, who seemed like a Mr. Integrity, you know?
Yeah.
And then he was just confronted by his own inner demons, his love for money or whatever. Yeah. Or you could have a president of a country who's maybe up to a point that had integrity. I'm not using our president as an example, but suddenly when you're in that position, so as your life changes, as you, 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 you face more challenges and opportunities and more power.
Yeah.
You know, your character can change.
Yeah.
And you could start, that's where the real test comes. I'm interested in when you started becoming a leadership student, a student of leadership, because you're a CA, for goodness sake. You know, I've met a lot of CAs, and they don't necessarily become students of leadership. They're very technically minded in many respects. You're different.
Yeah.
When did that penny drop?
Yeah.
I'm a leader. I need to be a student of leadership. And in fact, as we say, you realize my first profession is leadership.
Mm.
My second profession is CFO or being an accountant. But my first profession is leader. Yeah. In my home, first profession maybe is leader.
Yeah.
When did that penny drop?
Yeah. I think I was always, I was fortunate in the sports teams that I played for. I captained a lot. So I think I was given leadership responsibilities. So I guess there was something there. But for me, you know, my leadership grew from my, I guess, deep care and love for people in general. So I realized that I enjoy people. I enjoy working with people in whatever profession I was going to do. And it happened to be the CA route. And then I realized that, you know, if I enjoy people and I want to work with them, then I need to learn skills how to work with them and help them. And I think that's when I always grew up. I loved being around. I played tennis, but I specifically excelled in team sports. So I realized about the power of team and having a leader and dynamics and how you work. So I think I was just shaped that way. But I definitely, if I go back to one point, it was a passion for people. I really enjoyed working with people. And I looked at other CAs when I started. I thought, like, they just don't know how to lead. And when I went to SACA and I said, can I write on leadership? They said, oh, we've never had any real CA that's come to us and wanted to write on leadership. So that was a real opportunity. But I think a deep care for people was where it started.
That's an interesting one. Louis, that makes sense. You realize you enjoy people, so gosh, I better work on my skills to be more effective with them, and that turned into a passion for leadership.
Yeah.
See, in this case also, where you stop making a CA your anchor.
Yeah.
You something deeper. It's also very spiritual, real deep down, the best in me. Yeah. And this is so when the leadership becomes your first profession in that sense, to make a difference around you and stop hiding behind position or qualifications.
Lovely. Absolutely.
Your true north seems to be your spirituality.
Mm. Yeah.
Where is that? Also from childhood? Have you always been, or did something happen? And we're not going to have a religious conversation because that's not always spirituality, but how big a role does that play?
Yeah, I mean, look, it plays a huge role. It's really, you know, I don't have an anchor in many things in life, but that really is an anchor for me. And it's a moral compass for me. You know, everybody has got a view and an opinion, but, you know, my spiritual view in the Bible gives me a definitive right and wrong, and I build off that. You know, I was initially Catholic, and I sort of moved to a bunch of friends at school who were Christians, and I just gone found that way and purpose. And, you know, it's helped me in so many things. It gives me strength. It helps me deal with people. It helps me put my life into perspective. That's what it's about. I mean, for me, I want my life to count and be a difference to ever. And it's not measured on how many people you touch. I just want to make a difference. So that's where it keeps me grounded.
Okay. Powerful. And I understand that very much so. Last 2 or 3 minutes that we have, how would you describe working for Discovery then? It's been your career. You have a long career ahead of you. And you're obviously a fan.
Yeah.
What is it like working in this business?
Yeah. Look, this, you know, I mean, obviously now I get to brag, but it's the most amazing business. You work with the most inspiring people. I've found the most authentic and caring. All the way from Adrian, which he's so inspirational, to the various CEOs that I've worked for, from Neville and Johnny and Barry and and Ryan and so on. It's just been absolutely amazing. The culture is just innovative. They continuously stretching you to do more, but in a way that empowers you. It's a very empowered leadership. It's not domineering. It's very democratic. It attracts great people, and it's just a fun place to be. I like my kids. Over the weekend, I was talking to them about going back to work, and my one son, who's 12, said, "Hey, Mom, Dad loves work," and that's really what it is. I don't love it like an idol and a god. I love it because I can make a difference, and it fulfills me. But it's not my be all and end all. But it's just such an amazing place to be, and you really feel like you make a difference. And they're very good at that. The executive team of this business.
Yeah. Well, what is the role of Adrian at the moment? I mean, he remains Group C. I remember asking him one day, don't you feel like leaving at some stage and maybe writing a book and maybe speaking, maybe doing this or that? And he said, "You know what, Adrian, there's nothing that I could think that I want to do passionately that I can't do within my current role."
Absolutely.
And his answer, so he said, "So I'm stimulated and I love it here. There's no dream that I can't follow where I am at the moment." And he's obviously making that real for him.
Yeah. And he's such a motivating and humble leader. You know, you don't often find leaders that are that successful that are that humble. Adrian is unbelievably humble for how successful he is, yet incredibly driven and inspirational. After you spend 5 minutes with Adrian, you really believe you can change the world. And I think it's a very unique gift. And I think, you know, the bulk of this business is so successful because he's maintained that culture. He's maintained that culture for 25 years now.
It is amazing, eh?
Yeah.
All right, but at the end, I'm going to put you on the spot. What is your message to leaders in South Africa? Imagine you've got an audience of 100,000 CEOs, MDs, even politicians, leaders in our society.
Yeah.
What is Brett's message to them?
Yeah.
From the heart.
From the heart. Don't give up hope. You know, to me, there's nothing new under the sun. We've seen trends that have happened like this and go. South Africa, having traveled a lot, is the best country in the world for me. The people are amazing. The opportunity is great. We've got our challenges, but I honestly believe we're going to get through them. Now, I'm not going anywhere. I believe in the country, and if I look at a place where you can make a difference, I cannot think of a better place to be than in South Africa. And we've got to unite. It's such a, and we'll make it. I really, really believe that.
We seem to be uniting under the resistance that we find. Thank you so much, Brett Tromp, the CFO of Discovery Health. Louis, 10 seconds.
I endorse what Brett said.
You better with a peppermint in your mouth. Brett, thank you so much. Great having you with us. And it's been a wonderful conversation for the last hour. Stay tuned. Next up, our business masterclass with Richard Angus. Cheers, everyone. CliffCentral.com.